Thank you, John. Thank you, Paula. And thank you, everybody, for coming here. And I want to thank the Theosophical Society for making the event available for everybody's use. And I'm happy to see you all. Many of the faces look familiar to me. I've been here a few times. And we come here because we enjoy each other's company. We enjoy the lectures, the contents of the lectures, the knowledge that we get. And the knowledge we get does enrich our life, and that's the reason we keep coming here. And hopefully I can add a little bit to that today. That'll be my effort. And like I said, you all come here. There's a reason for coming here. And one reason is to see each other, get the knowledge. And in fact, there's a reason for everything in life. We don't do anything without reason. The reason for coming here and the reason for going from here to home instead of going to the club or the restaurants. There's a reason for getting up in the morning, the reason to go to the office, reason to get married, reason to have a job, reason for everything. There are reasons in life. There are desires in life. There are goals in life, and there are purposes in life. And there's so many things in life, we can touch only a few things. So we got to be selective. And one of the things that you know these days is very common, very popular, is yoga. 50 years from ago, people haven't heard much about yoga in the Western world. Now, yoga is more popular here in the United States than its birthplace in India. Mainly because we have a society that has more communication. We have TVs, newspapers, radios, seminars, so we can spread the knowledge easily. But just because we heard a lot more about it doesn't mean that do we have to follow it? Do we have to know it? What's the reason to know yoga? What's in it for me if I learn yoga? What is the purpose of yoga? And to be true to the subject, what is the true purpose of yoga? Is there a difference between purpose and true purpose? It's about the same. We just want to know why yoga is there, what it can do, what it can do for me especially, and how does it do? How do we get it? It's a vast subject. Yoga is a big, big subject, and it's kind of hard to explain everything in a short time. But in short, I can say yoga is a science. It's not a fad. It's not a coming and going. Yoga has always been there. Yoga is eternal. Yoga is as eternal as the God himself, or the creator of this universe himself. It's as old. And you might have to take my word, because it's trying to explain it's kind of hard, and you'll have to read some books. But like other sciences that have come and go, like you heard about physics, math, music, dancing, singing, chemistry, biology, those sciences have come and gone. And you might say, wait a minute, physics never come and gone. Physics is here, chemistry is here. No, physics has changed, chemistry has changed. I'm an engineer, I'm a retired engineer. I can say with authority that these things have changed a lot. There was a time when the electricity was either positive or negative. There were two types of electricities, and how many people know that there are two types of electricities? No, they're not. Anyway, things change. These things change with time, but there's something that does not change, something that has not changed. A science that has not changed since eternity, as early as the civilization was started, and that is yoga. It's not a fad. But just like I said, all the sciences have changed. Yoga has been changed by people for a certain reason. It has suffered the spiritual poverty of the modern world. I would call it spiritual poverty. It's been trivialized. It's been watered down. It's been reduced to cliches, and it's been misrepresented, packaged into a profit-making subject. Every corner is a yoga center. It's been represented as an alternative way of doing the exercises. That's all. But as you will read it in literature, yoga is a lot more than that. Exercise, sure. What they're saying is yoga is for exercise. True, that's true. But that's a very minuscule, small part of the overall yoga education. And that's what I want to present it here. The purpose, true purpose of yoga is what? For us. And also I would like to mention in the beginning is many places have presented yoga as a cult, as a religion. It's not a cult, it's not a religion. It has nothing to do with religion, any religion. In fact, our Guruji, our mentor, used to say that all religions of the world are based on the yoga philosophies. All have roots in the yoga. And this yoga is the one that can be learned by people from any faith, from any community, from any religion, young and old, any race. It's universal. Since it's been here since eternity, people have changed, civilizations have changed, religions have changed. Hence, this can be practiced by all of them. So yoga is a science which has been eternal. And it's a science, is as practical as it can be. It's a methodological science, and it's a very systematic discipline. It's a set of techniques that we can follow. Set of techniques, just like science. Science starts from observations, and then it goes to hypothesis. Then it goes to theories, then it becomes laws. And I don't know if you can know these terms or not, but science progresses. Same way, yoga has progressed in the minds of the people. Not that yoga itself has progressed, yoga was always there. They say yoga was started by Lord Shiva. And nobody knows the origin of Lord Shiva. How old is he? He was always there. So he's the one who gave this yoga to the world. They say that just like when you buy a car, it comes with a manual. How to take care of the car. If you take care of the car, it's guaranteed to last 100,000 miles. If you don't, all warranties null and void. It can go off anytime. Same way, yoga is a manual for human life. It tells you how to take care of your life. And if you follow these procedures, this manual of human life called yoga, your life will be long and healthy and happy. If you don't, it can fall apart anytime, just like a car. So, like I said, it's a science, and the true purpose of this science is to help the human beings to become aware of their deepest nature of human being. The word is deepest nature. What is nature? What is a deep nature? What's the deepest nature? All religions tell you there's a soul at the heart of the human body. To know that soul is important. And all of us might say that, I know it's a soul somewhere in the Hari and it's part of the God and so on. Hey, I know it now. What's next? No. To understand, to realize soul, the nature of the soul, how, what it is, how does it work, who I am, to make you aware of that, your inner self is the true purpose of yoga. Now, I have said a few words which look like very common words to you, that to make yourself aware of your innermost self. If you dissect each and every word, what do you mean by inner? Go through the mouth, through the ears, tear open, and you find something that is this, something called inner. Is that inner? So how do you know your inner self? And what do you find out? And after you find out, how do you act? That is the purpose of yoga. It's very complicated. It's not just a set of exercises. Exercises make your joints and muscles, nerves fine. You can breathe better. Your heart is good, your lungs are good, your kidneys are good. But this experience of yoga as to how to go into inner self, which I'll be explaining on later on, is the purpose of yoga. And this was not written by anybody. It was felt by the old religious gurus, rishis, sages, scientists. They realized in their meditation, they felt close to God. Something dawned on them that we want us to feel that dawning of the presence of God on us. It dawned on them, and they realized certain facts about human life, and they put it together in the formats. And of course, there are so many books on it, but I tell you one thing, the best and the smallest book in the world is Yoga Sutra by Patanjali. You might have heard about it. It's a sutra, means lines. He wrote a book which fits into my pocket. I can put 10 of them in this pocket. That's a small book. It has 196 lines. And first line says, this is the discipline of yoga, Atha Yoga Shastra. The second one says, Yoga's Chit Vritti Nirodha. Yoga removes the vrittis, the changes, the variations of your chit, the deepest of your mind. And the rest of the 194 lines explain to you how do we do that. And rest of all the books in the library downstairs or anywhere in the world try to explain those 194 lines. That's how deep that book is. It's written in Sanskrit, been translated into all the languages. You can see it on the internet. But I tell you one thing, you read it once, read it 10 times, you will not get much out of it. You need to have a guru, a mentor, a true teacher, a religious teacher, to teach you and explain to you how it works. At the ashram, we have these classes, and it takes about 3 years to explain those 194 lines. And they say, well, now we finished it, let's start again. And we start again. So we have done out 3-4 times so far. And you know, continue doing until people understand. Yeah, I know it now a little bit, you know. But anyway, the important thing that yoga teaches us is to do with our nature as a human being. And our nature as human being is peace. Humans are peace-loving by nature. And that true nature goes far beyond the limits of mind, body, personality. Like say, I'm happy if I get a good car. I'm happy if I have a good job. I'm happy if I'm healthy. I'm happy if I have friends. I'm happy if I get a good meal today or a good sleep. I'm happy if I have a lot of friends, the people praise me. These are short-lived happinesses. And yoga makes you realize, which is the purpose of yoga, is that the true peace goes way beyond this mind and emotions and feelings. And it tells you that human potential is limitless. I'm not saying this word limitless vaguely. I say that again, limitless. Human potential is limitless. And that Patanjali's yoga, 196 minus 2, 194 lines, they tell you how it is limitless. Limitless in itself. Who's limitless in the world? God. And then we say that yoga is limitless too. And that's since I said that yoga has been there since time eternity. It's been as old as God himself. And when you follow the yoga truly, to its greatest extent, taught by an experienced teacher who has been there, who knows it, then you assume the powers. You are almost as good as the God himself because you become God. How many gods are here? All of you. It's just like the example they give is that a drop of water is a drop of water, H2O. Clean or dirty or doesn't matter. When it falls in the ocean, what happens to the drop? It's part of ocean. It becomes an ocean. It's as good as the ocean. Same way, when this soul, which has been separated from the super soul, from the creator, from the ultimate, and it joins that, it becomes part of that and is as good as that. And you have the same qualities as the God. It's just like you cut a watermelon, you take a piece of it, it's sweet, then you know the rest of the watermelon is also sweet. So if you can dissect this, not physically, spiritually, and find out you have a soul, and you can experience that soul, you can experience the God. That's how powerful the yoga is. I'm talking all words. I'm not giving you anything how to do that, but I'm going to later on explain some of the easy methods of doing it. Easy to follow, easy to explain, but very hard to tread on it. And those who tread on it, like Patanjali, like Jesus, like Lord Rama, Krishna, Buddhas, and hundreds of thousands of people that we don't know, they didn't want to be known. They don't care. They can do that. They did that. You can do that. So what I'm saying is the true purpose of yoga is to unite ourselves with our highest nature. And this reintegration takes place through certain steps. And until this reintegration takes place, we are working with our mind, with our emotions, with our bodies, and we see the sorrowness, insecurity, and fear, and separation, just like we all do. We have anxieties, we have happinesses, we have moments of happiness, we have moments of sorrowness. While this reintegration happening, while we're trying to follow the path of yoga, this will happen. And the reason for that is why it's happening while we are trying on it, because all these things come out of the reason of absence of peace. And peace means God, absence of God. And it's just like a little kid separated from parents is unhappy. He can get all the other people in the world, but until he gets the parents, he's not happy. Same way, we are separated. This soul is separated from the super soul. Until we unite with that soul, super soul, we're not going to be happy. So this integration has to take place. And that integration is an English word, and the Sanskrit word for that is yoga. Yoga means, it's a Sanskrit word, yug. It means joining. Joining of what? We join two things, A and B. One is the soul, the B is super soul. Joining of soul with the super soul, the integration is called yoga. And how do we do it? We go through all these books and teachers and seminars and so on. So in this modern world, how do we gonna do that integration? This modern world, what has happened is that we have created so many technologies. We used to have buggies with horses, and then all of a sudden somebody invented the horseless buggies. People are so happy, gosh. Here's a box with wheels, and there's no horse in front of it. It's rolling on the ground. People were really complaining, hey, what the hell is this? So anyway, now we have cars, we have airplanes. And 100 years ago, we could not get off the ground 100 feet. We could not fly. We fly, we go to other planets. So things are going fast. So this technological advancements in health, in speech, in living, in travel, in everything, you think that has caused us happiness? No, it has caused us more problems. It has made our life more complex. It has taken our happiness away. It has given us anxiety and loneliness and violence and murders and all those things. Not only that, these things, they say that all these weather changes because of technology, which as a scientist, I can tell you it's not. It's not because of technology. It's the nature goes through these variations, and it's, we are going through variations which we have not seen it before, and it will go away. But how do we get rid of all the loneliness, anxieties, fears? How do we get reintegrated? And I tell you that it's not going to be through more innovations, more technology. No, it's not going to happen. This is going to have to happen by searching our inner self, because the peace is there. Don't go out, go in. Every day, go inwards. Know yourself, know thyself, go in. And I still have to explain to you what is going in means. It's a very, very important thing, what goldment is, what this inner self is, and where is the peace and tranquility and the wisdom that comes into the peace. So this attainment of the realization of the inner self is the purpose of yoga, is the true purpose of yoga. Let me expound a little bit on to what's in means. You might have heard about Atma Darshan. Atma Darshan means the seeing yourself. Atma Gyan, knowing yourself, knowledge of the self. Swadhyay, studying yourself. These are some technical terms used by Sanskrit language. Know thyself, know who you are, know your identity. What happens is, if you look at any living being, not only human beings, on the surface, we see a body. This body was not here 69 years ago. I'm 68 years now. This body was not there. And a few years from now, this body will not be here. So who's Mohan? Who's Mike? Just a piece of meat that I'm walking around? There's more than this body. I have a mind. Every human being has a mind. That's a subtler part of our personality. And you know that mind is a lot more powerful than the body and the physical strength. There is something subtler than mind we're trying to go in now. Subtler than mind is called intellect, a power of discrimination. And subtler than that is something called a soul. Easy to say the word soul. Now let's see what soul is. The feelings in the mind, the variations in the mind, are the cause of all the troubles in the world. Takes the inner peace away, takes the peace away, let's call it peace, because we don't know what inner yet is. Takes all the peace away, takes all the fun away, this mind. Mind is so powerful, hard to tame. Those who can tame the mind are almost as good as some of those avatars. Where is the mind in this body? Has anybody seen the seat of mind? Where is it located? Can a surgeon go in there and say, okay, I'm going to dissect it, find exactly where the mind is. Here it is. I'm going to control it. But the mind is there. Nobody can deny that. The mind is just a feeling. How does it feel? Mind has its servants. I have eyes. With eyes, I see it. If I see something good, I keep looking at it. I want to look at it again and again and again. I have a tongue, a taste. If I see something sweet, I want to eat more of it. I have ears. We have five senses. So those five senses are the sensors that this body is attached to the world through those five senses. If all of the senses are gone, we don't exist. Dead. Heart can run and lungs can run and all that thing. You are no good. So based on the senses that come in here, there are five action organs. They call five action organs, five senses, five action. The mind sends command to the five action organs, go do it. John said, Mike is here and he will give a lecture here. My ears heard. My mind says, step on. Left leg, right leg, leg. Walk over there, go through here and here. My eyes are directing me to come here. Everything I do, everything you do, is with the help of five senses. As a signal going in, and five action organs as a signal going out. But all this thing on top of that is just emotions. Mind can take a command, should take a command. It does not take a command. It should take a command from intellect. It should think, is it right or wrong, good or bad, true or not, finite or infinite. That's intellect. The intellect is powered by something called a deeper mind, or called chit. You heard about it, chit. That second line of Yoga Sutra says, yoga chit vritti nirodha. Yoga removes the vrittis, the changes of the chit. So more subtler than the intellect is the chit. Now, where is the chit in the body? Can't tell it. I mean, as a physicist, I have tried to explain that as to approximate way of where the mind or the chit would be. But chit is the storehouse of all these information in you. Storehouse of all the information, all the impressions, anything that we see, feel, experience, it goes into our mind. If it stays there too long, it goes deeper into the mind, just like storehouse. We bring more stuff in there, we keep putting on top of it, pretty soon the stuff on the bottom is not visible, more and more stuff keep going on. Same way, chit is the deeper part of that storehouse, where impressions of all our life, of this life and the previous lives, they're stored in there. When we die, that chit storage goes with us. So if you can clean up that chit, if you can clean up that chit, you will see the image of soul in there. I'm telling you what inner thing is. Now let's look back. A mind is a collection of all the input and output that makes impressions. Impressions goes into our chit based on the intellect that tells us right or wrong. And that chit thing is being bombarded, being stored with so many things, and the true soul, who we are, is covered. It's just like an ocean. They call it the vrittis, the mind feelings, are considered the waves on the ocean. Always there, always there, always there. But below a few feet of those waves is a miles of deep water, which is quiet. If you are under the ocean, or the bottom of the ocean, in the chit, in terms of body, if you're at the bottom of the ocean, you want to see the sun, you can't. You cannot see the true image of the sun. But somehow, by miracle, by any reason, if you could disquiet those waves, become totally quiet, you can have a true image of God, true image of the sun and moon, other things, the outer world, you can see right there. Same way, chit, if you could clean up that mess, you could remove those vrittis with the help of yoga, yoga chit vritti nirodha, second line. If you could remove that thing, you will realize the God. You will see the God. And it's very wrong for me to say, wrong in the sense I don't have any other word, to say you can see God. See means see with the eyes. There is a special receptive for everything. You want to see sound? You cannot see sound with the eyes. You have to have ears or microphone. You want to see heat, electricity? You have to have different instruments for that. Same way, God is another element. To realize it, to feel it, to see it, to hear it, or whatever you want to call it in English language, or any language, in fact, you got to have a special tester. To test electricity, I have a special tester. I cannot put my fingers, or I cannot put a microphone there. I got to have a special light tester, electricity light. Same way, that tester that sees the God is the chit. And chit is all clouded, all full. To clean up that chit so that we can realize God. Why realize that? So that we can realize ourselves. So that we can see the true nature of ourself, which is peace, part of God, is the purpose of yoga. I hope I'm trying to make a little bit clear. If you have any question, I don't mind taking question now, because I'll rather give the answer right now than you having to forget that later on. So this, like I said, the two purposes, to understand ourselves, to the true inner peace, and inner peace resides in the chit, and chit is clouded by the compound variations of intellect and the mind and this technological advancements and the social interactions and of the world and the people and the nature itself. Now, easy to say that, go ahead, clean up your chit. Your purpose of life is done. You'll achieve the purpose of life. Yoga has done its purpose, shown you the path to God. But question is very hard to go to that chit. Very hard to even control the mind, the first step. Very hard to even take care of the body, even, primitive step. All these exercises we have, these yoga, centers all around the world, that's what I said, they're minuscule. They just only tell you how to take care of the body, because body is need to be taken care of, because without the body, we can't control the mind and the chit and everything. So it's just like a catch-22 situation. You've got to take care of the body first, to take care of the mind, take care of the mind. You're going to have to take care of other things too. So these yogis, they devised certain methods. And one of them, naturally, is a yoga manual. But I can tell you some of the paths they told us which works really good. Easy. You can do that. My favorite subject is chapter 9 of Gita, the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not going to explain that here. Bhagavad Gita is a manual of trying to understand yourself, your true relation with this world, with this body, and ultimately with God. But some of the things that have been common that you know or that you can follow easily are like Hatha Yoga. About Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga is a subsection of yoga which deals with the physical body. Control your body. You're not talking about mind yet. Control the body. So Hatha Yoga has 7 sections, of course, and it deals with the muscles and the joints and the breathing exercise also. This is all Hatha Yoga. And that helps you understand the rest of the body, which is subtle, more subtle than the physical body. So Hatha Yoga tells you that. Other is a Karma Yoga. You heard about this Karma Yoga. Karma means karmas. Karmas, your actions. You reap what you sow. That's very simple. Every action has a reaction. So karma yoga, what is karma yoga? That's a karma, what I told you. But what is karma yoga? Karma yoga is the yoga of action, means you use the actions that you should do, everything that you can do, everything you do skillfully, selflessly, lovingly. Skillfully, selflessly, lovingly. I tell you one thing, there are so many different preachers, and they're all good. I'm not criticizing them. There's so many different ways of doing things, so many different ways of following life. But you say, I come here, and what did I get after 1 hour talk? I tell you, if you take one or two things and literally follow on it, and month later you will see yourself. You may not even feel that you have achieved something. People around you will tell you, you have changed. I don't know, what have you said? I don't know, I haven't done anything. But I'm saying, when I'm saying this one, that you do the things skillfully, means anything you do to the best of your knowledge, and then don't worry about after that. Selflessly, don't think I'm going to get so much money, are people going to praise me, love me. Just do it selflessly and lovingly. Not that, oh, she told me, he told me, do this thing, done, I'm gone, my job is done. No, lovingly. Even if somebody that you don't like tells you to do that. If you do these three things out of the thousand of the things that I can tell you, other people can tell you, which are also okay, but look at these things. If you can do this thing, you will be a karma yogi. You will be well on a path of what yoga wants. Nirvana, knowing the chit, feeling the chit, joining the chit, integration with the chit. It's called karma yoga. Gita's 18 chapters, 6 chapters tell you about karma yoga, how the karma yoga is, what is that, how to do it. And these three words, skillfully, everything that you do is cutting the vegetables, you're driving the car, taking the bath, helping somebody, do the best you can and don't worry about it. Leave the results to the public, to the world, to the nature, to God. Don't worry about somebody insults you, what a lousy job you did, or somebody say, oh, wow, great job. Don't be worried about it. Just do it skillfully, selflessly, and lovingly. That's one way to do it, if you can do it. If you don't like it, there's another one called Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga, Jnana means knowledge. It's a little more different, it's a wisdom. Knowledge, not it's not the knowledge of math or physics or chemistry or dancing or driving. It's a knowledge of the God himself. Where is God? Part of it is in the soul. Knowledge of soul. If you can find that knowledge, which teaches you what is real in life, what is not real. What is finite, what is infinite. What is transient, what is everlasting. That knowledge, if you can get that, which is harder than the karma yoga, you'll be equally good, then forget about the karma yoga. Okay, the knowledge of what is real and what is not real. This is real? No, it's not real. A few hours from now, this won't be here. It's not real. Real is something that's not going to change. Unreal is something will change. How fast, how soon, that's not a question. But it will change. Our body will change, this building will change, the earth will change, the universe will change. The only thing that will not change is the soul and the super soul and the God. Hence, the only thing real in the world, in the universe, is God. And when you go know about the God, that's called Jnana Yoga. The thing is difficult because in the process of trying to know that God, which is in here, you're going to have to do the physical exercises, you're going to have to do the mind control, you're going to have to do chit control, and then you go to the bottom of the chit and say, I find it. It's a longer path. So that is a path, but it's more difficult. There's another one, a Bhakti Yoga. It's much easier. Bhakti is devotion. It's a yoga of devotion. It's another way. It's not the do all of that. It's another way that you can. Bhakti yoga is a path of surrender, a path of faith, a path of devotion. Love. I love God. I tell you, if you have a Narad Sutras, just like Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, Narad Sutras, the Brahma Sutras, if you can ever read that on internet or have somebody read it to you, it's in Sanskrit, it takes a few years to understand again. And these days we are going through those Brahma Sutras and Narad Sutras at the ashram. That love will take you to the Nirvana. First of all, it tells you what love is and what God is, what the love for God is. Three things. They say, there's no place in the world, there's no God. Is God in me? Yes. Is God in you? Yes. How about in between us? Is there God in there or not? Or if I move right here, God's going to move with me? Well, God is always there. There's no place where the God is not. Hence, God is in all of us. And once you realize that God is in all of us, we are all children of God. And I will not fight with my brothers and sisters. I will not hate them. I'll help them. Everything is God. This building is a God. Because God is in the building too. I will not do anything to destroy the building or the nature or the rivers. I will not do anything to disturb the peace of the world. I'll be a good human being, good citizen. I'll just love everything around me. I mean, you will see that the love of God will just spill all over the world. People are going to start loving you, just like you love them. So that's the bhakti yoga. That's another path. And then there are paths. You heard about the Kundalini yoga. There's only one yoga, by the way. There's no different types of yoga. These are different approaches to achieve that yoga. Yoga means integration. Integration means the true purpose of yoga is to integrate ourselves with God. These are different ways. You can use one of those ways. You can never use all of those. But I tell you one thing. You start with one, others will come follow it. If I want to take this finger over there, these other fingers are going to go with me. They are tied together. All these paths are tied together. So Kundalini yoga is a highly technical science. Do not ever try Kundalini yoga. I'm saying again, quote unquote, please do not try Kundalini yoga on your own or without a real experienced yoga master. I'm not saying for the sake of, I'm not trying to, you know, scare you, but Kundalini yoga, what is Kundalini? Kundalini is a built-in power. Energy in ourself, and they call it Kundalini. What's Kundal? Kundal means a coil. Coil is a spring. Just like spring is compressed to let go, energy springs up. It's stored in there. That energy is stored in here. The way to unleash that energy, the method of doing it is called Kundalini yoga. That actions of yoga which helps you free that Kundalini, free that energy, is called Kundalini yoga. There are six energy centers, they're called Shat Chakras. You can try to unlock, uncoil it, any one of those through certain methods. But I tell you one thing, it's just like that, if I have a spring right here, and I all of a sudden I'm playing like a kid, and I'm just, it's gonna blister my face and poke into my eyes, and I just get hurt. It's just like that. So that Kundalini yoga has to be under the supervision of a master who can tell you how to do it, how to control it, what are the symptoms of it. I have seen people with my eyes, not one time, but 10 times, 100 times, those peoples, I got scared looking at them. My Guruji was there, said, don't worry about it, it's okay. And nobody could put them back, compress them back, other than the Guruji. Scary, very scary. I just cannot believe it, how scary it is. But doesn't have to be all scary if you're under the supervision of your teacher. So Kundalini Yoga is another way of doing it, to arouse that energy so that we can see ourselves. So don't try it without the yoga. But what happens after you suppose you do all that exercises and you do these practices, you know, one follow one of these paths? What do you get? You're not going to get a car or house. You get physical health. You know that. Your muscles work okay. Your joints, your organs, nervous system, circulatory system, skeletal system, excretory systems, sensory system, they'll work okay if you do the yoga. It's not that you're not gonna die, you will still die, because this is a physical mass, it's a not real. Remember that stuff that's not real, the one that's gonna go away. This body is not real. This will go away, but as long as it's there, as long as you are, you mean your soul is the guardian of this body, you got to take care of the body, and this yoga will help you take care of that body physically. And also, by following any of those paths, yoga will help you balance your mind. It is not going to quieten your mind completely. It can, but won't in a short time. It will help you a lot. It will start cleaning up the clutter in the chit. And I use the word start cleaning up. It may take next 10 years, 20 years. You may die with it and not clean up. But that chit, whatever's left in it, is going to go with you in the next life. And you start where you left from in this life. And you can go on and on and on. So this yoga will help you clean up the chit, which is the purpose of the yoga. And also, practically, it will help us manage the stress. Physical stress, mental stress. Mental stress is a lot more than physical stress. It will help you manage that stress. You know, this is stress relief yogas and so many yogas. People have commercialized it. And there are techniques to manage the stress. But if you follow any of these karma yogas or bhakti yogas or gyan yogas, not kundalini yoga, not unless you have somebody to you. So that you will achieve with the help of the, that will, I guarantee you. I said, Mike, what is your guarantee? Who are you to guarantee me? Because my Guruji guaranteed me, his Guruji guaranteed his Guruji, and so on. And this has been witnessed by thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. I have seen, I would say, at least a few thousand people. I can say with confidence that, yes, they have managed to reduce the stress. I don't want to brag, but I feel myself, without yoga's practice, I would have been a different animal than what I am. So there's something else that at the end I want to tell you is that something called Raj Yoga. You might have wondered why I haven't used the word Raj Yoga. Hatha Yoga we have talked about. All these things was Hatha Yoga. Raj Yoga is a something that does not ask you to have a faith in anything. Have faith in yourself. You can have faith in yourself. And then you're going to have to define yourself as who yourself is. Again, I'm going to go back to the body and the mind and the intellect and the chit, four different sections, and ultimately to the soul. So this orderly process of self-transformation from the integration with the outer world, away from that, to the integration with the inner world is called Raj Yoga. And this cultivation of detachment from the outer world to the inner world. Inner world doesn't mean under the skin. Inner world means the chit world. Not the mind world only, chit world. Rajyog will teach you. Talk to you about that. And once you go there, you're going to stop defining yourself with your titles or with your other physical things. Oh, my name is John. I'm 55 years old. I have two houses. I have a beautiful car and a wife and five children and so much money in the bank. And I'm a professor and I'm doing all those things, titles, which are not real, not permanent, not godlike. So you're going to start identifying yourself away from those outer titles to the inner title. I'm a part of God, just like you are a part of God. Hence, there is no difference between you and me. And that's what Raj Yoga is. And that yoga encourages you to find that inner place beyond the temporary titles. And without that, we are in a rut. We have impressions. We look at things by five senses, looking at things, sensing those things. We get desires to do this, hear this, taste this, eat this with the five action organs. And those desires then becomes actually actions with the help of those five action organs. And those actions which we are doing has an effect going back into the mind, which is from the mind, it goes deeper into the chit. And the chit is the one that brings you those impressions again. Chit says, looking at something like that is good. I want to do that again. And you have desires and actions and desires and actions that keep going on. That cycle goes on and on. That's what's called Chaurasi Ka Chakra in Hindi. The wheel of 84 means you're going to have 840,000 lives, births, before you get another human life. So you're going to go to that chakra. You don't want to do that chakra. So you know what I mean, that spin cycle. So you want to get out of that. And getting out of that is with the help of the yoga. And now I'm going to tell you, just I got 2 minutes over now. I'm going to spend another 3-4 minutes. Is that OK? How to get out of that chakra of desires and actions and impressions? So many different ways. There was Gyan Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga. The one of the best one, scientifically and yogically, is meditation. Meditation is a process that helps you temporarily disintegrate from the outside and try to see inside, integrate inside. So wants to shut the world out and try to see really who you are. And of course, doing it for 5 minutes not going to do the job, or for 5 days, or 5 hours, or 5 months, or 5 years is not going to do a good, complete job. It will do a job. Every little bit counts. But the more you do, the better it is. This is the one, by practice, more and more by practice, you will be able to have a gate. When you're going to be able to literally be able to shut the world out, you can say anything you say, I can see anything. My eyes will be open, but I will not be able to see anything. My ears will be open, but I will not hear anything. If you can reach that stage that really have shut the thing out, you have closed the door, people are outside, I'm sitting here, it's just like I'm looking inside. That's process of meditation. Meditation is a very complicated word. Yet, it's the easiest thing to do. Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, meditation. Easiest thing to do. What do? Sit down. Try to think of who you could be. I'm a soul. What does soul look like? What is it? Just think about that. Process it. What's its name? What's the shape? How big is it? How heavy is it? When you pay attention on that, you forget the other things. By doing constant practice, you cannot shut the world out. And as soon as you open the eyes, I'm back in the world, you know, I see the people and the building, and the inner side is all forgotten. The meditation is broken. Now, meditation can be done in so many different ways. Meditation on a picture, on an ocean, on a sound, on light, on God, on nothing, which is the best. You can do that. And they say the meditation on six chakras, one of the six energy centers I told you, that like a spring. If you want to do meditation, one of those things, you can do that too. And they say the best meditation is between the eyebrows, Agya Chakra. You heard about that, right? This is one of those six chakras. Why? Because all the mind and things, it starts from this physical location of this head and goes, spreads into the body and so on, which is a separate subject. But that gate is more easily accessible, buildable, right behind this thing. And when we pay attention on it, more on it, on this Agya Chakra, we are able to operate, learn to operate that gate more easily. That's why most people say, do the meditation on this Agya Chakra. So meditation is one of the easiest way to soothe your life. It will literally, stress relieves you. It will help you calm down, manage yourself light, and you do that. And then I said, meditation can be so many different ways. There are sound meditations also. And there's this, the most common sound meditation in the world is the word Om. O-M. Om. Om is a symbol used by Hindus, but has nothing to do with Hindus. Absolutely nothing to do with Hindus. What is Om? Every living being can utter the sound, oh, even a newborn is, whether it's a Christian or Hindu or any bird, any animal, they can say, oh. It's not Om, by the way. It's O, literally O, not Om. When we just lovingly say O with the nasal sound, we call it Om. It's actually O. The real sound is O. Like I said, I'm a space scientist, and one of the early tests we did in the space as to what kind of sound is the most common sound in the whole universe. We got all the frequencies and tried to convert into a sound frequency that is good to human ears, that can human ears can sense, and the sound was O. So the Vedas, before Hinduism was born, Veda said, that sound we're going to call is the name of the God. He says, you can do better meditation when you know somebody's name and shape. It's much easier. Without knowing the name and shape, you don't know who you're meditating on. I'm going to call that name, oh. And I'm going to sit down and call his name, oh. And I'm going to make a picture, whatever picture I want to make. You are a picture too, you are part of God. I can take your picture, and I can, oh, I can look at this picture, anything, because all part of God. They just made a picture at that time, and there was that swastika sign. That was the sound. They just made a, say, universal all four directions, every God is every direction. So symbolically they made that and made a sound, Om. So that was the Om meditation. So meditation is one of the easiest way to reduce stress, many life. Learn to walk on the path of yoga. And you really don't need much help from a teacher. So you can do it on your own. And Om, like I said, is a universal sound of all living beings. So Om meditation is the best.
I just want to thank you very, very, very much for such a short notice and such a wonderful lecture, actually.
Thank you.
Before you move on into other subjects, perhaps other people have other questions, you touched upon the subject of Raja Yoga. And it is my understanding that Raja Yoga has 8 limbs, right?
Yes.
If you can dissect it a little bit so that it is a little bit clearer for us. Because meditation is part of those limbs, but there is a part that deals with the character, the building of our character, which is also, I think, very, very essential. And few people talk about these things. I think it will be helpful as to what are these yamas and niyamas are, for example, yeah. In a nutshell.
Raj Yoga is basically what Patanjali has, you know, started to explain, and it's also called Ashtang Yoga. Ashtang means eight-part yoga. So he divided the whole book into eight sections. His book is divided into four chapters, but the whole subject into eight sections. And those subjects are yamas, niyamas. You heard about yams and niyams, asanas, postures, pranayam, okay, pratyahar, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. Those are eight of those. Yam, niyam, asan, pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. There are five yamas. Yamas are don'ts. Those are five things, don't do that. Niyamas, do's, five do's, do these things. Pranayam, so many different types of pranayam. Pratyahar. Okay? Pratyahar is the one of detachment from the world going in there. Dharana. Dharana is a before meditation, the pre-stage of meditation is called dharana. It's a innocently watching the thoughts come into your mind and try to block them. You're just trying, make an effort. That's called dharana. Then actually, when you're able to stop it, that's called dhyan or meditation. And the post-dhyan, post-meditation is called samadhi. So this meditation, what you know is dhyan, and there's a pre-meditation, there's a post-meditation. Post-meditation or transcendental meditation, that's called samadhi. Samadhi means when you are in with the God. At that time, you lose track of the surroundings. It's just like when you're thinking of God at that time, there are three factors. The person who's thinking of God, the effort to think about God, and the God itself. Three factors, you, me, God, and the effort. When all three are present, that's called dharana, premeditation. When the effort goes away, amrika dhyan, without making an effort, that's called meditation. I'm thinking about it. I'm still aware of these surroundings. And the third factor is when myself is gone, is only God is left. When you reach that stage, at that time, the altar samadhi, when you come hit here and like that, I will not even know that. I have seen people in samadhi for weeks, literally weeks. In their chair, they go there and they are in that, doing this. They are there in that position for a week. We just take the body, put it on the ground, and put a few spoons of milk in their mouth. But they don't know what's hot or cold or sleep or bathroom or food or thirst or nothing like that. You are not there physically. So that's the eighth part of that. That's what Raj Yoga is. That's what Ashtang Yoga is, eight parts of yoga.